Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Stroke. It's a topic we've covered a number of times here on HealthLink On Air, and it's been a while. I'm not sure we can ever really talk about it enough. It's a problem that can be prevented, and it's a problem that can be addressed very successfully as long as a stroke patient gets to the emergency room fast enough. Joining me at the microphone to talk about stroke this morning is Dr. Jean LaTorre, Assistant Professor of Neurology and Director of Neurocritical Care Service at Upstate. Welcome back, Dr. LaTorre.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's good to have you here. We have a lot to cover, so we're going to get started right away. I want to talk about some of the basics of stroke, just to remind listeners, because I don't think any of us can hear this information enough. But then I want to talk about some new steps in the way stroke care is being approached. Upstate is kind of right in the middle of it, aren't you?
Yes.
You are. All right. So there's this big word, neurocritical care service, and that has a lot to do with it. But neuro, of course, means brain, and stroke is a brain.
Yes.
It's a brain problem. Let's talk about the differences in the kinds of strokes.
Well, there are different kinds of stroke. There are strokes that happen because of the problems with small arteries of the brain. There are strokes that happen because of the occlusion or narrowing of the large arteries that go into the brain from your neck all the way up to the base of the brain. And there are strokes that happen because of a blood clot that forms somewhere in your body. It could be from your heart. It could be from within your brain. So there are different kinds of strokes. And different kinds of strokes have different way of managing them. And it makes a difference in the long run.
In the kind of care you're going to receive.
Yes.
And in all of them, if I understand correctly, in effect, the blood supply gets cut off. And so the brain is no longer getting the blood it needs to get.
Exactly.
All right. So if I'm somebody who really doesn't get medicine at all and really doesn't get even biology very well, then I have to stop to think that depending on which part of or what kind of stroke you've had, the treatment is going to be appropriate to that kind, but also the damage could be appropriate to that kind.
Yes.
Explain that to us a little more carefully.
So, you know, usually strokes that occur related to a blockage of small arteries, they produce small strokes.
Okay. And I've heard TIAs. Is that what you're talking about?
No. TIA is a different condition. It's related to stroke. It's a condition wherein you develop a abnormality that is on one side of your body, or you can have difficulty with your speech or your language, but then it goes away very, very quickly,
okay.
Usually within 1 hour. And most of these patients, when you look at the picture of their brain, they don't have any stroke.
I see. Okay. So it mimics it, but it's not exactly the same thing. All right.
The
so
same. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's not exactly the same, but it's like a precursor
okay.
for a completed stroke.
All right. So, but then if you're talking about these three kinds of strokes, then the first one you were talking about is not a TIA. That's what I wanted to establish. Go
no.
ahead.
No. Yes.
All
yes.
right. Go ahead. And the second kind?
The second kind is the where you have a arteries of your brain that gets narrowed. Sometimes it gets occluded to the point
occluded
that there's
meaning.
Occluded meaning there's no blood supply. It
okay.
gets clogged, mm-hmm. and therefore it causes a bigger damage inside your brain.
All right. And then the third kind.
And then the third kind is where you have a normal blood vessel, but then a blood clot forms somewhere in your heart, maybe from the irregular heartbeat. Or from a heart attack, and then it causes a sudden blockage of blood flow going into your brain, and it, you know, because it's a random mechanism,
mm-hmm.
it can go anywhere in any part of your brain, and it can cause small stroke or it can cause big stroke.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now, from the point of view of the person who's having a stroke, we can't tell what kind of stroke we're having.
No, not even. Sometimes even doctors cannot tell them initially.
Initially. But then you run tests to figure out which
yes.
kind it is. And then according to the kind it is how you treat it.
Exactly.
All right. So I'm stopping to think again from the point of view of somebody who's listening this morning or even myself, because I'm just, you know, a normal person who doesn't know much about this at all. If I start to feel the symptoms, what am I going to feel no matter what kind of stroke it is?
Well, it depends on where the stroke is happening. Okay. If the stroke is happening on the part of your brain that controls your speech or your language, mm-hmm. then you will have difficulty expressing yourself.
Getting words out.
Okay. You'll be confused. If it's in the part of the brain that controls your arm or leg, then you will have a weakness of that particular part of your body.
So when you say a weakness, like all of a sudden I can't lift something?
All of a sudden you can lift something.
Walk right?
Yes, okay. Or sometimes you may be holding something and then you'll just drop it.
Ah, okay.
And you will feel either numb or you cannot lift it up.
Okay.
Those are all signs of stroke.
All right. And then if I have one of those, whatever those symptoms are, and I also know a blinding headache can be,
A sign of stroke.
The worst headache I've ever had. I've heard that before.
Exactly. Right. You can have a facial drooping. Mm-hmm. It can be a sign of stroke.
All right. So either I, if I have the wherewithal to do it, or somebody I'm with needs to get me to the hospital right away.
Yes.
All right. And
the
when
best way is to call 911.
Yeah. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons for calling 911 that, you know, people say, well, I'll just drive him or I'll just drive her or whatever. But I think if you come in by ambulance, it's really a signal that there's something bad going on.
Yes. And it also alerts the emergency room that somebody is coming. People in the paramedic EMS are all trained to call in ahead, mm-hmm. so that when you get into the hospital, everybody is expecting the patient and the system of care is prepared. So it makes a significant difference to call 911, even if you think you can drive, mm-hmm. even if you think you can drive your relative to the hospital. The
right.
best way is to call 911 because they can facilitate everything in the process.
And that's really great advice. And that is no matter how bad you think this could possibly be. So now I am in Syracuse, New York, and I begin to have these symptoms. And I have a choice of a couple of different hospitals, a couple of different places I can go. The state is now designating which hospitals have the capabilities for taking good care of stroke patients.
Yes.
And they call them what, primary stroke centers?
They call them primary stroke centers.
All right. And they're really setting them up all over the state, aren't they?
Exactly. Ambulances are required. They are mandated to bring the patient to the nearest primary stroke center, even if they are very near the other hospitals that are not a primary stroke center. They are required to bypass these hospitals if they are within 1 hour.
Okay. So now the primary stroke centers, what is it about them? What gets you the designation? And we've actually talked about this before as far as upstate is concerned, but there are a number of people that you have to have 24/7 available for somebody who's having a stroke. Talk to us about some of their capabilities, some of the things they do.
So primary stroke centers are capable of delivering the acute care of patients who's having stroke 24/7 every day of the year.
So it's not like somebody comes into the emergency room and they say, let's call Dr. So-and-so to come in and take care of this patient. That Dr. So-and-so is right there.
Yes. So we have neurologists who are there that can determine what kind of stroke you're having. We have CAT scans that can take pictures of your brain within 10, 15 minutes of you getting into the hospital. And we have emergency room doctors as well as nurses that are trained to provide the care of a patient requiring acute care in that golden hours of stroke.
In the golden hours. And let's talk about those golden hours, because one of the big keys to stroke care is making sure you get that care as fast as possible.
Exactly.
And what are those windows of opportunity? Because I know they've shifted a little bit.
Yes. Since 1995, we have a medication called TPA, which is otherwise known as the clot-busting medication,
mm-hmm.
that is approved to be given to patients who are having acute stroke within the first 3 hours.
All right, but not everybody gets that.
Not everybody gets that because most of the time, patients come in late. They're beyond 3 hours, then they cannot get this medication. Very limited number of patients actually get this medication.
They do. But is it, that also is not a medication for each of the kinds of strokes.
Exactly.
It's only one of the kinds, right? The clot one, it must be?
Yes.
Yes. All
it's
right.
only one of the kind. Right. Some strokes require other interventions that need to be done right away.
Mm-hmm.
So that is just one of the ways by which we treat strokes.
Well, I have to think that there are a couple of different outcomes. If I'm having a stroke, regardless of the medical care I get, two things are going to happen. Either I'm going to be debilitated in some way, or I'm going to die. And the debilitation can be more or less depending on how fast I get to the hospital. And I think my worst nightmare would be debilitated enough that I was a burden to my family mm-hmm. and other people taking care of me. I would rather die than have that happen. And that's my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to guess that a lot of our listeners feel the same way. And the biggest difference then is how fast I get to the hospital. I can almost control how debilitated I'm going to be.
Exactly. Think of it this way. Every minute, about 1.9 million brain cells die. So when you're having a stroke, every minute counts. And any minute that you save facilitate the treatment that you are required to get is very crucial and very important.
And what do they say? Time lost is brain lost, right?
Time lost is brain lost. Time is brain.
Now, I want to explore a little bit more about this idea of Upstate having all these experts and some of our rural areas as well. We talked about if we were in Syracuse, what would happen. But mm-hmm. we have outlying areas and people who listen from all over the central part of the state. So we need to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about that and explore some of the things that are being done for people in rural areas. Can
sure.
you stay with us?
I will.
That would be great. And listeners, we are going to take a break. Please stay with us. This is Upstate's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR. Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, Every Patient's Advocate. And we've been here with Dr. Jean LaTorre, Assistant Professor of Neurology and Director of Neurocritical Care Service at Upstate. We're talking about stroke. And Dr. LaTorre, as we took a break for the news, we'd been talking about the different kinds of strokes, how they manifest themselves and so forth. You know, one of the questions I've had is recently in the news, we heard that Bret Michaels, who's a beloved by many rock star, had a stroke post-appendix surgery and so forth. So it begs the question, he's a young man, he's only in his 40s. Who's really at risk? I mean, we think of older people, but are other people also at risk for stroke?
People are now, we're now seeing more younger patients who have strokes. And
younger meaning how young?
Like in their 30s, 40s,
really?
50s.
Why
yes.
would that be?
Well,
I mean, it sounds unusual, so what's
yeah,
changed?
Yeah, it sounds unusual. You know, we're seeing more and more patients who have the traditional risk factors that usually are found in older population that are now very prevalent in the younger population, such as high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes, high cholesterol, and smoking is a very big factor that is still prevalent.
And do you think it's because more strokes are happening, or do you think that because more people are identifying it as a stroke?
Part of it is because we have a better way of identifying people who have stroke, and now people are more aware that, you know, when you have symptoms, you need to go to the hospital, and therefore they get identified as having a stroke.
They're there, yeah.
Part of it is also because of these risk factors that are very prevalent even among young people.
And because we talk about it so much, they become aware that that's a possibility and they're there. What about children? Do you ever see stroke in children at all?
Yes, unfortunately we do. We see patients as young as 6, 7, or 8 years old having a stroke. Most of these strokes that we see in children are in their first year of life, and it's related to factors during their birth or from their mother. But we see patients who are very, very young who develop strokes, and unfortunately, because it's very uncommon for them to develop stroke, their diagnosis gets delayed.
Oh, it does, because nobody expects that's what it
nobody
is.
Nobody expects, yes.
Wow. And what about, is there any risk if I'm in the hospital and I'm having surgery for something else, or if I'm, you know, whatever my treatment would be while I'm in the hospital, is there a risk because I'm having treatment for something else of me having a stroke?
Yes. So depending on where, why you came to the hospital for, especially if you're undergoing surgery, if you have risk factors for stroke, if you have narrow arteries, then the surgery itself may cause you to have a stroke.
Yeah, I can imagine that the blood clots, and what you're talking about here is one of the causes for a stroke being a blood clot. So if you have to heal from something else, a blood clot could then perhaps cause the stroke?
Blood clot can form when you're hospitalized, when you're not walking, and also when you're doing when you're having surgery, fluctuation in your blood pressure, when you're under anesthesia, when your blood flow to the brain becomes lowered, sometimes that can cause a stroke too.
I have to think, though, as you're being cared for in the hospital, that's the job of the people who are helping you out, is to be vigilant about those kinds of things.
Exactly.
Right. So if you would have that, at least you're right there and they can be on top of it.
Yes.
All right. We were talking earlier about if I'm in Syracuse, New York, so I now have this stroke center at Upstate that I can go to, and the EMTs know to take me there if I'm having a stroke. But I'm concerned about people who live in some of the more rural areas. We have some small cities around us, but we also have some really rural agricultural areas where they're a long way away from Upstate, certainly, from Syracuse, certainly. There are some smaller hospitals in the region. Is the state of New York also designating some of those hospitals as stroke centers?
They are, and they are actually mandating stroke centers to be a primary referral center called a hub hospital to network with these outlying hospitals to provide care.
So the hub hospital would be the one with all the capabilities,
yes,
all the potential, and that's what Upstate is.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got this, you can take care of people within with the TPA drug in this three-hour window of opportunity, and then you've got some other capabilities as well that speak to time.
Yes.
Okay, so some of the small hospitals you're working with already?
Yes, we have currently four hospitals that we are connected with via telemedicine.
Okay, and that's using the internet.
That's using the internet.
And what does that look like? If I'm a stroke patient in one of these hospitals, am I, you know, on a keyboard somewhere?
If you're a stroke patient in one of these hospitals, such as Cortland, EJ Noble.
Oh, up in Governor.
Up in Governor, Oneida, and Schuyler. You're going to be in one of their rooms, and they have a camera there. And if I'm the consultant, then I will be seeing you, and I will be talking to you directly, and I will be examining you as if I were there. And the hospital staff there, a physician or a nurse, will assist me into examining the patient. I also have capability of looking at your CAT scan from that hospital through the computer, so I can see the CAT scan, I can see you, I can examine you, I can look at your, I can interview you, and if indicated, I can tell the nurse or the doctor there to give you the clot-busting medication while you're still there.
Wow.
And then you will be transferred to Upstate for further care.
But the whole determination is made while I'm still in that hospital.
Exactly.
It sounds a little Star Wars.
Yeah, you can say that.
Yeah. I mean, it really sounds great. So my next question is, why doesn't every small hospital have something like that?
Well, it's pretty expensive.
Ah.
And for a small hospital, the cost can be anywhere between $30,000 to $50,000 to maintain the system
a year. Wow, that's expensive. All right, so that means they would have to have a lot of patients that would need that kind of care.
Exactly.
What do they do when they don't have that kind of?
Well, unfortunately, it depends on the circumstances. Some of them will call us for support, and we can manage a patient over the phone. But some of them will just admit the patient to the hospital and provide what we call supportive measures, which is, giving, initiating rehabilitation and giving aspirin or controlling blood pressure. Those sort of things.
I have to think, though, I mean, if I'm the person who's in that rural area, to me, it's the difference between what I was talking about before. If I don't die, I'm going to be debilitated, and I'm either going to be debilitated just a little tiny bit because I've gotten the care, exactly the care I need, versus I could be, I hate to use the word vegetable, but that's kind of what it amounts to, and a burden on my family if I don't get that expanded care.
Exactly.
Let's also talk about, I know there's something too that's new, that you used to have only the 3-hour window of opportunity with the clot busting drug, but that's expanded now to more hours?
That is expanded now to more hours. Right now we are not just depending on the time window, but we are evaluating the patient on whether they are more appropriate for a more aggressive intervention such as a catheter-based therapy.
Okay, and the catheter-based therapy, there's a difference between how that catheter delivers the drug. That's the window of opportunity,
exactly.
Right? So what are the two options there, the three-hour option?
In the three-hour option, you get the drug through intravenously.
Okay, throughout your whole body.
And it's delivered throughout your whole body. Okay. With the catheter-based therapy, we put a catheter in your groin, and the catheter gets advanced into the brain.
Oh, wait a minute. So you're going to thread it all the way up through to my
brain?
You're going to
thread it all the way up from your groin all the way up to your brain, kind of like what they do in the when they do the heart catheterization.
Right.
But in this time, it's going up your brain. They will locate the clot, and into the clot, they will deliver the clot-busting medication.
But that takes some really specialized
takes specialized care. It takes a whole array of infrastructure to mm-hmm. deliver that that care and to be available 24/7, and that's available at Upstate.
All right, so that really is the key, isn't it? That's the kind of extra care that a group like Upstate can deliver that the smaller hospitals would never be able to take care of because they could never afford the specialists to do that.
Yes.
All right. So let's go back to this whole idea of there are these services then that Upstate can provide that the other the hospitals, even if they are considered to be primary stroke centers, they can't provide. That's one of them, isn't it? That specialized person to do that.
Catheter-based therapy is one of them.
All right. The 24/7 thing.
24/7 availability of specialists in neurosurgery, neurocritical care, interventional radiology. Are all a big part of our stroke program in Upstate.
Now, the American Heart and Stroke Association, they used to just be the American Heart Association. I guess they've added stroke back in because it's all tied to the same body system,
yes.
Right? Okay. They've now given Upstate a gold designation.
Exactly.
And what does that mean? Because not everybody gets that.
It means
even
that
the primary care
yes.
or the primary stroke yes. centers don't always get that.
This is an award given by the American Heart and American Stroke Association to stroke centers who have consistently provided the standard of care over 24 months.
Okay.
So this is 85% of all the
all the patients admitted?
All the quality measures that
oh.
are measured in stroke care, such as giving antiplatelet or aspirin, controlling hypertension, providing care that is necessary for stroke patients. Gold Award means that that stroke center has provided the care over the last 24 hours consistently.
No, 24 months.
24 months.
Yeah, so this is really a recognition not of your capabilities, rather of your track record.
Exactly.
So this is stuff that you're already doing.
Yes.
What's next? What do you add to all of that? I mean, do you feel as if you're providing everything that can be provided, or is there something on the horizon maybe just coming out of clinical trials now or something else? What are you aiming to?
Well, one of the big part of our program providing the advances in stroke care through research. And a big part of our goal right now is to participate in multi-center clinical trials. We
All
are
right.
currently participating in several trials right now. So patients who are not eligible for the standard of care, we can still consider for care that are that we are testing in research.
And what are some of those kinds of care?
Those are we have trials that involve treating patients combining both the intravenous TPA with intra-arterial or catheter-based intervention.
So they would get both kinds at the same time?
They will get both kinds concomitantly.
Mm-hmm.
So they will receive the intravenous, which is a standard of care, and then an additional treatment would be a catheter-based to determine whether the stroke will get better with this more aggressive and more organized treatment.
And does that, are you finding, I mean, for instance, I would guess that would mean you would maybe less therapy on the other end once you had survived the initial stroke?
Exactly. And, you know, we are now seeing more and more commonly patients who receive treatments such as this to actually go home and go back to their normal life as if nothing happened.
That is amazing. That is truly amazing. And that's really what your goal is, isn't
it? That's what we go
with. If you have to have a stroke, if you couldn't prevent it to begin with, at least get up and walk out of the hospital and go home like nothing happened.
Exactly.
Very good. Well, Dr. Jean LaTorre, this has been fascinating. I think we have explored stroke about as much as we could, and I think it's great news, particularly for people who live in outlying areas who really didn't have access to this kind of care before. Thanks so much for coming by this morning.
Thank you for inviting me.
And listeners, we are going to take a break. Please do stay with us. This is Upstate's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.